Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The first case to be heard this morning is Zamora v. Gonzalez. Mr. Tenbrick.
Good morning, Your Honors. James Tenbrick on behalf of the petitioner on this case. I believe I make a relatively simple argument in this matter. And it has to do with respect to Supreme Court case in Sancerre and whether or not the petitioner in this case and the respondent below would have been required to plead guilty as opposed to go to trial on his criminal case in order to be eligible for a 212C waiver. And my argument is that Sancerre does not necessarily require that a non-citizen accept a plea of guilty as opposed to going to trial, which is exactly what the respondent below in this case did.
But Mr. Tenbrick, how can you reconcile that position with the language in Sancerre where the Supreme Court says things like the alien almost certainly relied upon the likelihood of receiving, I'm paraphrasing a bit, 212C relief in deciding whether to forego the right to a trial? There's a quid pro quo that the court was worried about, and if you've given up something valuable, your constitutional right to a trial, then maybe you have some expectation of eligibility for relief.
No, that I understand that that's what Sancerre says. However, the court does go on to say something in the latter part of the opinion that in this instance where there was a quid pro quo, it would create an obvious and severe retroactive effect, inferring that a party doesn't have a burden to show an obvious and severe retroactive effect, just merely a retroactive effect. So the fact
that you aren't saying that in the immigration legislation, first EDPA and then IRA, however you want to call that other statute, Congress was pretty clear that it did intend to have a retroactive effect, for lots of it anyway.
Well, I think Sancerre is pretty clear with respect to the first prong of Landgraf that with respect to this portion of IRA enacting 240A and apparently repealing 212C, that it wasn't clear, and that's why it moved on to the analysis under Landgraf as to whether or not a party's rights had been impaired, and that's when it referred to the reliance, at least in Sancerre, that he had in making a plea of guilty. But reliance is just one factor. I don't think that Sancerre meant to limit the consideration as to whether or not a statute is retroactive only upon whether or not one of the parties relied on the prior statute. I mean, that's turning interpretation of congressional statutes on its head. I mean, what we're trying to do is figure out congressional intent, not the intent of a party. And I cited to a case, it's a Fourth Circuit case that talks about that. Olatunji, it's a Fourth Circuit case, 2004. And frankly, that's exactly what the statute says. Why are we looking at the intent of a party when it's the congressional intent that we should be looking at? And furthermore, by going through all these hoops to determine whether there's reliance is absolutely, well, it almost removes the burden from Congress to pass responsible laws that clearly state whether you want this retroactive or don't want this retroactive.
Congress is familiar with what Congress does.
No, I'm aware of that, but courts are obligated to read statutes plainly and read the, and interpret them fairly. Now, I would note too as well that there was a case of Fernandez Vargas that came out of the Supreme Court, and I think it was in 2005 or 6. And in that case, they looked at the Immigration and Nationality Act again, and there they didn't. They were considering the statute that makes it illegal for somebody to return, and they didn't have to rely on the rely on the reliance argument to find that that statute wasn't impermissibly retroactive. So I don't think definitely not the Supreme Court is tied to the idea that in order for a non-citizen to claim that a statute is impermissibly retroactive, they have to rely upon the prior law. I guess I'm going to reserve my time for my rebuttal unless there's any other questions at this time.
Fine. Thank you, counsel.
Okay.
Ms. Varner?
May it please the court, Ann Varnon for the respondent. Your Honor, I also believe that this is a simple case and that the court should find that the board's decision was proper in light of its reliance on the court's prior precedent in Montenegro and also the Supreme Court's precedent in St. Cyr.
What is the basis for removing him here?
Neither
of these convictions are aggravated felonies.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So
they were crimes. The first was a crime of moral turpitude, and the second was a drug conviction.
If he only had one of these two, would he be in the same predicament as he is right now?
The drug conviction would render him inadmissible.
Inadmissible.
The possession conviction?
Yes.
But if he was here, that could not be an aggravated felony. This is only to keep him from entering, is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor. He was not charged with an aggravated felony.
It seems just so, sort of ridiculous that he was convicted after a jury trial of less than 15 grams, which could have been half a gram for all we know, and now he has no opportunity for at least to ask for discretionary relief. He's been here for 22 years.
Yes.
Pretty harsh.
It does have a harsh result, and this is a very sad case. Nevertheless, this is the law that we operate under in this country. And
isn't that the question, though? I mean, I think your opponent makes a reasonable point when he says that the first step along the road to the St. Cyr decision had to be that Congress had not explicitly addressed the retroactivity question. Because, of course, if Congress speaks to something, then unless there's some constitutional problem with it that nobody thought would have existed here, one would follow what Congress says. But if there's ambiguity, then why do we have to follow that ambiguity down the road to keep this guy out and to keep St. Cyr in? What makes sense with that?
Well, the Supreme Court in St. Cyr said that if the parties had a reasonable reliance, they clearly did not find that under Landgraf that the St. Cyr and the Arrera and AEDPA, as we call these horribly named acts, but under those that an alien would not have the entitlement to discretionary relief or the ability to seek the discretionary relief, said the Supreme Court went to the second step of Landgraf to see whether principles of fair play, notice, could be found by reliance.
But, you know, I guess one way of looking at it, one way of looking at it is certainly the way that you are presenting, but another way of looking at it is that the Supreme Court, as it typically does, was deciding the case in front of it. It was deciding a case where somebody, in fact, had pleaded guilty, and so it naturally discussed the factors that were pertinent to that. It did not have before it a case like Mr. Zamora's, where the person had gone to trial, and so we don't fully know what it might have said if it had had a case like Mr. Zamora's.
Well, the court did say that where the aliens had clearly given up something,
I understand,
and the government had received a benefit, that this was it showed that there was a reasonableness to the class of aliens in that situation.
But all I'm saying is we don't know. Maybe that's at a level of 90 out of 100 of reasonableness, and maybe you're still at a 65 with Mr. Zamora's case. I just don't. A little bit hard to see how you can derive the negative proposition from what they said on the facts in front of them.
Well, there have been numerous cert petitions that have been filed, and to my knowledge, as of this date, I do not know of any that have been granted.
But you know, of course, that the court has repeatedly said that we can't draw any inference from a denial of cert, which I think is clearly true. If they get between 9 and 10,000 petitions a year, right, and they decide to grant 80, there are plenty of reasons why they might not take a particular case.
Right, but I think the court, even though the facts of St. Cyr did involve a guilty plea, I think that the court said enough, certainly, to set out the reliance interest from which to find that there is none here.
Well, why couldn't you say that he did enter a guilty plea to the automobile matter? So once he has a guilty plea entered, then if he didn't have this other drug conviction, he would be eligible to apply for 212 relief, correct?
That's correct.
So now he has it, like, in the bank. He's got a guilty plea there. Why can't he just rely on that and swoop in anything else that happened and ask for relief?
Well, Congress has chosen to be very harsh in this.
Well, Congress, I think, really wanted to cut it off, period, and have it be retroactive.
That's
correct,
Your Honor.
Sincere stopped that.
And the drug, Congress has really taken a hard line with the drug offenses.
Less than 15 grams of cocaine.
Well, it was cocaine, and if you look at the statute, it has to be possession of marijuana, I believe, in less than 1 gram for a person under 21, and he doesn't qualify, he doesn't fall into that.
Right.
So even though reasonable minds might differ as to whether this has a harsh outcome, it is clear that this is what Congress intended in enacting the immigration laws. And we've seen numerous cases that have had similar results based on possession offenses. So in wrapping up, I would just say that the court should find that the board properly decided that based on the facts in Montenegro and St. Cyr, that the court should follow its precedent and that of St. Cyr in denying the petition for review.
Thank you, Ms. Varn. Mr. Tenbrock, how much time?
I do believe I want to correct something. I believe if he didn't commit the first offense, the automobile offense, the possession of cocaine would be a waivable offense, because I think if he availed himself of the new law, since it's not an aggravated felony, he would qualify under cancellation or removal, because there is the recent Supreme Court case that says possession of cocaine is not an aggravated felony. So I think that I'm not sure if that helps my case, but I didn't want anything to be mistaken here. And I guess one point it did occur to me as I was preparing an argument here that there seems to be something fundamentally wrong with essentially punishing someone in Mr. Zamora's position for merely exercising his right to go to trial. I mean, I know from my criminal experience that because a person exercises a right to go to trial as opposed to take a plea, it's not fair for judges to impose an extra penalty, for instance, for taking a jury trial. So there just seems to be something wrong with, if somebody's maintaining their innocence, as Mr. Zamora did, that he should be required to, you know, pay this kind of penalty that he's being asked to under the Immigration Act. I guess unless there are any other questions, I don't have anything else to say on this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Tenbrock.
Okay.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.